Life is 10% what happens to us and 90% how we respond to it. The right mindset is what separates most successful people from the average person. Changing your mindset can be one of the most valuable skills you can learn to help you create your own kick-ass life. Well, we want to help you begin that process today and give you a free copy of David Wood's training, Mindset, Your Key to Success. In this downloadable training, you'll learn how to develop a winner's mindset, how to overcome limiting and negative beliefs, how to love the word no, and much, much more. To download your free training, simply go to thekickasslife.com/free. That's thekickasslife.com/FRE.
Jambo, fellow adventurers, this is Mike Dooley, and you are listening to David Wood on the Kick-Ass Life Show.
Want to make your life better? This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
So, good morning. It's Tuesday, which means I have a wonderful, wonderful guest. We're doing something a little different this morning because she selected her own music. It's so great. She said, this is my favorite music, my favorite song. So in her honor, we will be playing her favorite song. You'll have to wait for a moment. I think this is a great little twist. Interview someone. So what kind of music do you love? Let's play that. So anyway, we'll see if my mind can remember that the next time. So how's it going out there? Are you practicing your gratitudes this morning, everyone, a little bit? As you're sitting here for a second, maybe take a moment, think about all the things you're grateful for. I'm so grateful. I'm grateful for my kids, Calvin and Ben, just the great teachers they are and great pillow fight buddies and, paintball, extraordinaire paintball buddies as well, I suppose is a good word. But no, so many things. Grateful for Jen, who's always supportive, and for my ex-wife, Pam, just making life and understanding the calling I have and supporting that as well. So just grateful to be in a new home. So as I sort of go through a few gratitudes, I want you to start thinking about that, because truly it's the best way to start every single day is in gratitude. And you can do it lasting a night. A friend of mine who's now earns over $130,000 a month, when I'm at her house and she's exhausted at the end of a day, she brings out her journal and she writes a page full of gratitudes every single night. So, you know, I'm not telling you something that I don't believe works. I believe it does work very, very much. But, you know, my guest today is really all about the bounce back. It's about, you know, hitting bottom and bouncing back out of it. Now, she talks a lot about the corporate world, but I want to talk to you a little bit about what does it mean to bounce back? I suppose thinking about, you know, we have plans for ourselves, and then suddenly things go wrong sometimes, and we they don't look the same way that we anticipated. What I found over these years, and you know, I'm 52 now this year, is that always hidden within those adversities is the seed of even greater things, and always hidden in those adversities is the lessons that we need in order to expand. And so I have a very different philosophy when crap happens. I just truly believe that it's meant to happen. And because of that, I don't focus on it at all. And you've heard Jen say this on when we're doing our Ask Dave show. You know, the idea that you know, crap happens and you start to look at the crap. And then what else do you see? Nothing. And it just gets bigger and bigger and worse, and it just becomes consuming. So when crap happens for me, the practice, the kick-ass life practitioner that I am, is I don't look at it for more than a second because it's already happened. I can't change it from happening. And I've done that. You see, the reason I've got to this place where this muscle's built is because I have spent years consumed by things that happened, like, my famous wedding incident, where my life sort of grinds to a halt, or ground to a halt, because I was too consumed. And so now when things happen, and I can think of it thousands and thousands of times where, you know, you're going down one path, this happened to me, and suddenly it all stops. Whether it's a job or income. And I remember a famous story of my life. Oh, what a goofball. But, you know, I remember I was president CEO of a company, and the board of directors, there was a person in the company that I felt was holding the company down. And I'd grown it from the basement to a multi-million dollar company. And as a president and CEO, I had a lot of power, but I listened to the board a lot, and I work with the board, and the board weren't hands-on. There were a lot of medical doctors, to be quite frank with you. And I made a recommendation, but it affected one of the family members of one of the primary board members. And so they did an independent review, and they found in my favor that it was right. They found, after interviewing everyone, that this person was quite toxic, and my contention was that the company couldn't grow with its toxicity. And because it was someone's family member, you know, the main owner of the company, it was quite challenging for me to just go in and say, I'm sorry, you got to go, right? I would have said it to anybody else, but I wanted their approval because it was that, right? Anyway, so in the end, he decided as a majority shareholder that they wouldn't follow through with that. So I resigned. I thought, you know, there's no point in me staying here. So I went from, you know, having a very, very strong income and building a company for a number of years, almost 3 years, out of a basement, and it being everything in my life. You know, it was kind of all consuming. And we were growing, and we were sort of really, really doing some amazing things, to having nothing overnight. Boom. And I remember the next day waking up, and my assistant, she left that day. And actually the guy, the doctor who did the review, he left as well. And he was a very, very wealthy, very beautiful, beautiful man. And he left. So a number of people left because I left. And sadly, the company never grew past that. I mean, exactly what happened. And in fact, I think they're closing their doors probably almost around this time. But sadly, they never grew. And that's not I told you so kind of a statement. It's truly just a sadness, is that, you know, if we'd have followed through, who knows what would have happened, right? But for me, my assistant's mom called me, and she was really worried that she'd left her job because of me, and that she had nothing. So I started a company the next day, and I got her to come and work for me, which she ended up taking over, and she ran it for years, and she just recently sold it, and she's pregnant now, and her name's Courtney. You hear me talk about her all the time. But that was that moment of bounce back, where the next day I started something and went straight into, and it was as if I had the experience from those years, and I had the you know, all of the memories from those years. But all of that immediately moved into a whole new energy, which sort of started the pathway to here. And it was actually her that introduced me to Peak Potentials, which was to be the place where I would start training and start doing this work. Otherwise, I would have stayed a businessman, because that's what I was. I was building and growing businesses. So anyway, my guest today is all about the bounce back. She's just lovely. And I'm going to play her song as we introduce, as you sit down and listen to the wonderful Sherry Thomas. I still remember how it all changed. My father said, don't you worry, child. See, heaven's got a plan for you. Don't you worry now. Well, you know, here I go again. I want to think of something intelligent to say, but I can't. I'm just excited. You know, I just had a talk, a little chat, just a few minutes with my guest today. And already I like her so much, I can just tell. And I almost felt that we'd sort of known each other for years in our couple of minutes that we chatted. So Sherry, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. So happy to be here.
Did you feel that way? Did you feel like we'd known each other a long time there, or am I making it up?
Yeah, no, I felt that way too, but I think I feel it because I've been listening to you, and I've been listening to your podcast and learning so much. So that's why I felt an instant connection.
You've been listening. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You have great guests on, and I learn. I always learn. I always learn something.
Well,
from you.
Sherry, you know what? I mean, you're on your second cup of coffee.
It's true.
You were just asking me, how do I wake up? Because I don't drink coffee. but Sherry, you know, I know you're really excited. You're off to New York. to get an award for your book. I want to start there only because I know that we're going to delve a little bit behind the covers of your book. And you have a great gift for everyone. So I'm really excited about all that. But talk about the award. How are you feeling about getting an award for a book?
Oh, wow. It is such a blessing. It's just, I'm just humbled and honored. And it's phenomenal. It's phenomenal that the second book I wrote actually won Best Career Book of the Year for the independently published author. So it's an incredible honor.
I always wonder, you know, when people go on their story and one day they wake up and they're kind of, you know, I won't use the word famous, but you know what I mean? You sort of do something. I always think that everyone wants to leave a legacy. And I think a book is one of those great legacies, right? The sort of long after your toes are curled and you're pushing up daisies, someone somewhere is going to be reading your book and your legacy continues on. Did you ever sort of, when you were a little girl, did you have aspirations to write books and do what you're doing, or did it?
Oh, heavens no. No, I never even had a notion of writing a book. Never, ever. In fact, I wrote the book with the motivation, and it's funny because Marcus Buckingham started laughing at me when I told him, but my motivation was actually, I finally had to tell myself, Sherry, don't worry, nobody will read the book, so it's okay to write this. I'm so paralyzed with you know, who am I to write this? And, you know, are people actually going to read? I mean, you actually get paralyzed. And, Marcus started laughing, and he's like, that is so not his motivation.
That's hilarious. Yeah. This is why we all sing in the shower, because we think no one's going to hear us. But if we put a microphone on, we stand on stage, it's like, ah!
So, oh, yeah.
But we should tell that the Career Smart, right? 5 Steps to Powerful Personal Brand, right?
So that was my first book. Was my first book. And I published that about 5 years ago. And that was kind of interesting. So I just kept getting messages from people about, you know, can I help them reinvent their career? Because I reinvented my own career. I was in radio. I was a disc jockey. And then I was in television. And then I went into corporate America. I was in finance. I've worked for 3 Fortune 100 companies. And so my friends and friends of friends would always ask me, you know, how did you reinvent your career? Can you help me? And I was always more than happy to do that. And all of a sudden I had the thought, gosh, if I just wrote a book and told people how to do it, I wouldn't have to keep telling people over and over. And that snarky little voice was like, ha, 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 yeah, you know, who am I to write a book? But it was funny because when I wrote it, the Wall Street Journal got a hold of it. And because of that, I actually talk about it more than ever now.
That's awesome. Well, you actually do some work for the Wall Street Journal, don't you?
No, I've been interviewed by them 9 times.
That's what I meant. That's why I think that with a paper, when you do work for them, is that you're a regular sort of guest on their in their paper, right?
Oh, they come to me to comment on career articles.
Awesome. So talk about your new book. Give us the title.
The new book is called The Bounce Back, and it's personal stories of bouncing back higher and faster after a layoff, reorg, or career setback.
So why this is so awesome for us, because the kick-ass life is all about reinvention. It's all about reinventing ourselves. And I'm so excited that you actually listened to the show. I didn't know that. And that really excites me. But the bounce back, before we get to the bounce back, let's talk about your experience. Because for you to write a book called Bounce Back, you have to have seen and heard from and met a lot and also been in a situation where you've had to bounce back. How many people, when you look at North America, and I know you live in Phoenix, where, you know, I mean, it was devastated through the recession, as far as more people in Phoenix, I think, lost their homes than almost anywhere else in the world.
That's right.
So you're sort of personally close to people who are in that place of struggle and survival. Can you talk a little bit about what you're seeing out there and what's going on for people?
Yeah, well, that was actually my motivation for writing the second book, The Bounce Back, was because I just wanted to put something positive out there. There was so much negativity, and there still is. You know, you can't get a job right now because the economy is so bad, and you know, the unemployment rate is so high, and there's just so much negativity. And I wanted to show people that you can bounce back, and I wanted to give them, you know, personal, real life stories of people who did, from all different industries. industries, from healthcare and high tech and television and radio, and, you know, all different industries, all different job roles, so that you can bounce back. And so, you know, I am seeing a little bit of improvement. I mean, there are jobs that are coming back into Phoenix, which is wonderful. Construction industry is high, and high tech is hiring, which is good. And so there are definitely some industries that are getting back on the feet, on their feet. But, you know, I still see a lot of people struggling being out of work for a year or 2 years. And my heart goes out to them, because I've been laid off myself. And I know it's just a really tough time. It's a very emotional time. You're struggling, you know, if you don't have a career, then who are you? You know, it's a little bit of self-identity, and then the financial aspect too. So it's tough out there.
Mm. And so when you look at, you know, the idea of bouncing back and reinvention, I mean, both your books, you know, I feel that you have this kind of idea of reinvention. And so for me, I'm kind of fascinated about the mental game of the bounce back and the mental game of the reinvention. You know, because so imagine then I'm in a slump. I've sort of gone to school. I've sort of planned out my career, and suddenly I'm out of work. Somebody said, "I'm sorry, we're downsizing, or we're closing altogether, or you're just not young enough, you're not smart enough, you're not tall enough, you're out of here." What goes on mentally for a lot of people when that happens?
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up. It's so much of it is mental. And I mean, all kinds of feelings come up, but feelings of anger, feelings of shock, feelings of embarrassment, feelings of resentment. And you have to give yourself time to mourn. You have to give yourself time to mourn the loss of your identity, the loss of your vision that you've created for yourself, the loss of income. You have to give yourself time to mourn and get over it and grieve. And, you know, there are probably 5 steps, you know, like grieving is. But the important thing that I think is that if you just try to sweep it under the rug and go plowing ahead full force and, you know, connect with your network and try to get on job interviews, that those kind of negative emotions are still around you. If you don't deal with them, they're still around you. And people can sense that you're distraught and you're anxious and that you're hungry for a job. So I really think it's important to, you know, allow yourself 2 weeks to get mad, you know, scream into a pillow, cry, weep. You know, I talk in the book about how I hid underneath my bed for a week. And another time how I stayed in my bathrobe for 3 days. I mean, just give yourself permission, allow that, but also give yourself a cutout date. You know, I'm going to mourn for a week. I'm going to mourn for 2 weeks. And then tell yourself, that's it. That's it. Now you've got to pick yourself up. Now you've got to start moving forward. You've got to refresh your resume. You've got to figure out the story that you're going to tell to hiring managers, you know, what happened to you. There's a lot of work that you need to do then to prepare to set yourself up for success in getting that new job.
Mm. I love that, because I think it's, you know, you get people and you know them who everything's always fine, even when it's all crap, you know, it's kind of like big smile on the front, but you can tell, right? I mean, you can tell when someone's being authentic. You can tell if you're sitting in front of someone and there's that desperation, or there's that, you know, lack of belief in self, as someone who's interviewing, it's pretty easy to pick up that stuff. So I love this idea of getting it out, of actually feeling it all, because that's so important in all aspects of life. It's like when you separate from a loved one, you know, mm-hmm. or someone passes away, we can do the same thing, right? We can feel it all. We can allow all the emotions up. We can scream and shout and beat the pillow, like you said, and choose to get over it, right?
Yes. Yes. Otherwise you're just going to hang on. Those feelings are still going to be bubbling up in you. If you go to job interviews and they ask, you know, the question, well, tell me about your last manager or tell me about your last job, you're going to answer it in a negative way. I mean, those feelings will come out. So it's just really important to allow yourself time to grieve.
Mm. So open the book, The Bounce Back. I want you to give me a journey. I know that you're going to give away a gift to everyone listening, that they can actually have 3 chapters to listen to. Isn't that what the gift is you're going to give away to everyone?
Exactly. Yeah. Three chapters.
That is so cool, by the way. I think that is such a cool thing to do. And we'll tell them how they can get the chapters. But let's open the book right now and just lead us through what you think, you know, the sort of the some of the important points are in the book.
The juicy bits?
Yeah, let's do the juicy bits. Okay. See, I should start drinking coffee again because my mouth's not working this morning. So
The juicy bits.
These are new lips. I'm just breaking them in for a friend.
Okay. Yeah, well, I start off talking about how I was laid off earlier in my career 3 times in a row. And I call it the three-bang layoff. And one time was at a TV station where I worked in Monterey, and I loved that job. It was an NBC affiliate, and I just loved that job. And I was good at it. It was fun. I was there for 3 or 4 years. Life was great. We were the number one station on the Central Coast. And then it was bought by Rupert Murdoch. And he's just known for coming in and kind of cleaning house and bringing in his own team. And so anyway, I was laid off and I was devastated. I took it very personally. I didn't really look at it like it's a money issue, which so many times it is. And so, you know, that's one time where I just stayed. I was staying under my bed for a week because I was just devastated. And then I rebounded and I started working at an advertising agency in Phoenix. I came back home to Phoenix and I worked for a company. I was hired as a senior account manager, and so I had 13 accounts. And so it was a little bit of a tough ramp, but what made it especially difficult was they had also lost one of their senior partners at the advertising agency, who was all responsible for public relations. And I didn't realize at the time that the president hired me to be the senior account manager and handle all the PR. And it was just a lot of work. And I was working 70 hours a week, but I still could not keep up with the workload. And in that case, you know, I completely flailed and I failed and I was invited to leave. I just simply couldn't do the work of two people. Well, so
I love that description. And I was invited to leave.
That sounds so much nicer than
I got my ass kicked out of there, or I was fired. But every single one of you from now on who are listening that's been fired and you're in that process right now, you were invited to leave. I love it.
Yeah. So much of it is a mindset, though.
Yeah.
Much of it is a mindset, though. And then let's see. Oh, and then I rebounded again and I went into, it was kind of an interesting situation. There's a financial and accounting group that's out here in Phoenix and they're quite large and they needed a marketing manager, which is kind of an oxymoron, you know, accountants who need a marketing manager. And I'd never done that before. My gosh, at that time, I'd never even had an accountant. So it was a very different culture. I mean, imagine going from television to advertising and then all of a sudden into an accounting world. It was just a very different culture. And I didn't give myself time to really ask the right questions and embrace the culture and develop relationships and things like that. And that was a very strange situation because I worked there for 30 days. I got a raise. You know, the deal was work here for 30 days and, you know, pass the probation and you get a raise. So on the 30th day, I got a raise. And on the 32nd day, I was laid off. Mm. With no reason, and I still have no idea. And that was a tough one, David, because I think
it's because you took the raise.
Maybe.
There are counters that, well, no, you're taking costing too much.
Yeah.
But that's isn't that worse though? Isn't that worse when you don't know?
It really was. I just kept playing tapes in my mind of, you know, conversations I had, and I asked them when they were inviting me to leave. I asked them, you know, what did I do? And he just shook his head like nothing. And I said, what didn't I do? And he just shook his head. And I said, what did I say something? You know, what didn't I say? And so that was a tough one, you know, getting clarity. And I think a lot of people are in that situation where something happens and you don't get the information on the why. It happens. It knocks you down. It completely spins you around. It crashes your world and you don't understand the why. And I think that's an important part is, you know, as you're grieving and you're grieving over that vision that you had for yourself and that loss of income is to realize that you might not ever know the why. And you just have to be okay with that. And it doesn't need to stop you. It doesn't need to stop you from your journey. It doesn't need to stop you from your dreams. It really is a blessing. And you just need to look for that gift. There is going to be a next step in your career.
This is a big point, though. This idea of, you use the word blessing and gift. Just after you talked about being invited to leave and, you know, and losing your job. And so only somebody who's come through it can go and use those kinds of words. And a lot of people are in it right now and they have no concept of gift and blessing. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it is really hard when you're in it. I call it a tornado. When you're in a tornado like that and you didn't cause it and you don't know why it's happening and it's turning you upside down, it's a tornado. And it's very hard to see that it's a blessing and a gift. It's not in those moments, I don't think. But when you come out of it and you do the work and you decide that you're going to own your career and nobody else is going to stop you, and you do get hired or you start your own company or whatever that next step is in your career, you do look back and you see it as a blessing in that, you know, the universe had a different path for you. It really, really did. And it wants you to use your special talents and your special gifts in a different way. That's what I believe. I believe that it doesn't, you know, things don't happen to you or to me. They happen for me.
That's such a wise statement. Let's look at, again, I can almost feel somebody out there right now that's in it. And this idea of reinvention hasn't even come to their mind yet. And in fact, maybe they've been in it like you two or three times. I want you to sort of describe what happens if you don't go through this process of mourning, deciding, choosing, drawing a line, stepping out and reinventing yourself or bouncing back. I see a lot of people out there who's got the weight of the world on their shoulders. They become, their life sort of gets sucked out of them because of these circumstances. And in the end, they become almost unemployable, right?
Yeah. Well, gosh, I would hope that nobody is unemployable. I think we all have, you know, certain kinds of training and experiences and accomplishments that make us unique. And so you can get hired. So
I want to be clear, but what I mean was energetically, where they lose they lose the confidence in themselves. I don't mean that they're unemployable. I mean when they show up, so only half of them show up because they start to lose the confidence. I was talking to a guy last night. This is why I'm saying this, is, you know, who's tried a couple of things in very different arenas and they failed, and he feels so much shame and guilt, and he feels like his wife doesn't even trust him anymore. Do you know what I'm saying? That's what I mean by unemployable, not that you can't be employed, but just that lack of faith in self.
Yeah, it's something I've been through, and I think that looking back, job hopping and just taking a job, you know, when that happens, it's almost like a hit against your ego, a hit against you, and you almost want to defend yourself and say, look, I do add value, I do get high results, people do like me, and so you want to get hired again as quickly as possible, and sometimes you do, but if you don't think about it, if you don't make a purposeful, conscientious choice of, this is the type of environment I want. This is the type of work that I want to be doing. I want to be working for people who value and appreciate me. If you don't set your bar, then you're going to accept anything. And, you know, I found myself, so when I talk about the 3-bang layoff, I talk about how at that time in my life, I just thought my approach was really, if somebody hires me, then that's where I'm supposed to work. If somebody's hiring me, then that's where I'm supposed to be. And I don't think that at all anymore. I think I have a tremendous say in who I work for and what I do. I think part of the key is me stepping up and finding opportunities and creating opportunities. But to go back to the person that you just mentioned about the job hopping, you know, it is easy. Like for me, you know, when I got laid off 3 times in a row, it was very easy to get like so discouraged and start doubting myself and thinking, my gosh, you know, maybe I don't add any value. And, you know, really thinking like maybe I should just, you know, apply at Dunkin' Donuts and hand out donuts. And I just thought, there's so much self-doubt that creeps into you. But I think the thing is really the blessing that was in that was it forced me to go deep with myself and figure out what is the career that I really want. And, you know, David, you talk about this all the time in your podcast that, you know, we create the life that we want. We're the architects of the life that we want. And I believe that we're the architects of our career. We choose who we work for. We choose what we're doing. Even when you get into a job, if you work at a company in an organization, you have tremendous negotiating power. You really do, with your manager on what types of projects you work on and what types of teams you lead and, you know, stretch opportunities for yourself, things like that. So it's important when you go through those bumps, those two or three career bumps of getting laid off or working for a manager that you don't get along with, that you do that soul searching. It's happening to you and it was happening to me for a reason. And really just kind of going back, and I talk in the book about how it's important to go back into each of those situations and get whatever it is you needed to get in those situations, because there are blessings along the way. Learn what you could have done better. Learn what they could have done better. You know, write it down, write it on a piece of paper. Give yourself forgiveness. Maybe you could have done things differently. Maybe you could have handled conversations differently. Maybe you could have asked for more training, asked for more help, whatever it is. Give yourself permission to let that go. Forgive others, you know, your manager. Yeah, your manager probably should have done a lot of things differently to help you. Going through that process of forgiving yourself, forgiving others, I think that's part of that deep, deep work that you and I were just talking about a few minutes ago.
Mm. Again, I what I love about this is it's so really the keys to success in everything in life is, you know, we try something, it doesn't go the way we planned or the way we thought it may. You know, we fall down and we have a choice, right? We have a choice. And I always think of Walt Disney whenever I think of someone going through bankruptcy. And, you know, Walt Disney went bankrupt 7 times. And I look at Disney World now, you know, where, you know, millions of children come and have their some of their greatest memories in their life, their childhoods, through this man who would not be denied. And what he did at each time he failed, as it were, if you use that word, he would look at the mistakes he made and learn from them and take those as a real life lessons and bring it to the next application of his dream. And really, it's amazing, isn't it? How many you must have met so many successful people now that have been through these journeys, exactly what you're talking about, what people are going through right now listening, and taken the lessons, practice the forgiveness, because I think that is so key, that whole piece on forgiveness, and then stepping into and reinventing and deciding. I love all these things you've said, deciding what you want, and truly this works, right?
Yeah, I interviewed a lot of people for the book, and I picked out 13 professionals who I thought had very unique, very, very different circumstances. And I just thought each of them, the way they handled it with just grace, tremendous grace and purpose. And I asked all of them, you know, looking back, what are the lessons learned, and there's such richness there in each of those. So I think that everybody could relate to, you know, at least one of the people or two of the people in the book.
Mm. So again, if we go through this area then of some of the other chapters, what's some of the other big takeaways that you'd like to share a little bit on the show today?
Sure. So the mindset, you know, is really key that you just brought up. I think another really key takeaway is we're so responsible for creating opportunities, creating and identifying opportunities. And a great example of that is really looking at, there's one person, Cindy, in the book, and she was in, I think, the same company for about 10 years, and she'd been in the finance industry for 30 years, and she suddenly got laid off with no heads up. I mean, it was a complete surprise. And she was the main breadwinner in her family, so this was devastating. And I love her insights of she didn't have time to sit down and weep, I think is what she said. And she instantly just started picking up the phone and calling people, and she made, I think, 21 appointments in 21 days. And she said she got to know every Starbucks in town and really reaching out to her network and just saying, hey, I need some help. I'm ready to take that next step in my career. Here's what I'm looking for. Can you help me? And at the end of that 21 days, she actually had 4 job offers. And so that's what I mean by creating opportunities. If she hadn't gone and asked for help, she wouldn't have found those opportunities. And so it just became clear, story after story after story, that we have to step up and start looking for opportunities, asking for opportunities, seeking out opportunities, as opposed to doing what I did, and I think so many people do, is just sit back and, you know, they apply for, you know, a job online and they send down their resume and, you know, they hit the send button and then they sit back and they wait for the phone to ring.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Yeah, I talked about that on a show the other day. So I do an Ask Dave show, which I'm sure you may have heard, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's kind of a new format. And I remember one of the guys was talking about that reinvention, 59-year-old guy. And I talked about, you know, treating the unemployed part of your life like a job. And if you applied yourself 8 hours a day to reinventing yourself, and again, I didn't use that term, but to discovering your new path, and you treat it, and you went out there and you spoke to more people. So this is exactly, that was just what I feel I've always done to create my own success, is I just won't be denied. But that really is quite a key point. And this lady was able to really create massive momentum. She didn't sort of dwell in the, I've lost this career I've had for all these years, I'm the main breadwinner. She didn't get it sort of stuck in the circumstance. She got stuck into the solution, but she did it with vigor, and she did it sort of creating massive momentum, and it ends up with four. That piece, is that something you see as the key to a lot of the successes of people who bounce back?
I do that they get to a point, all of them get to a point where they set their bar and they say, enough is enough. I'm going to want more. I want more. And once they set their bar, then they go out, they start talking to people, they redo their resume, or they talk to their manager and they say, look, this is what I really want to do. I want to start doing this type of work. Can you help me? And once they set their bar, they don't let anyone stop them. And I love that. There's another story about Kim, who was a nurse, and she was in the healthcare industry for, gosh, I think it was about 15 years. And she really liked it. She enjoyed it. And after about 15 years, she kind of outgrew the job. And there was another position that she wanted to look at. And it was more about business operations in healthcare. And so she signed up to go back to school to get some more training on that. And she went to her manager and she asked if she could change the night that she worked. She worked on Wednesday nights and she wanted to take a class. And she said, you know, I'll work another night, like Thursday night, Friday night, whatever, but I just want Wednesday nights off. And he was so demeaning to her. And he said, you know, not only just no, but don't talk to others about how you're getting more education. It just seems like you're bragging. And I love how she really thought about that. And she thought, I'm not going to let this person stop me. And she was a single mom at the time, not getting any kind of child support. And I loved her story so much. So she went in and she quit. And, you know, I mean, she put a lot of thought and a lot of plan into it, but she just thought, I'm not going to let one person stop me. I've got my bar. I've got a vision here. I can do this. And so she went in and she quit and she went back to school full time. And she just talks about her journey of, you know, going through all that fear of, what am I doing? Am I crazy? Letting a paycheck go. There's somebody who depends on me. What if this doesn't work out? What if I can't get hired? What if I fail? You know, tons of fear that comes with that. And so she talks about how she really addressed that fear. And her mantra became, one step at a time. And she just told herself, you know, I'm not going to worry. You know, that's going to happen 3 steps from now. I'm on step number 12. That's step number 72. I'm just going to focus on step number 12. And she did. She got through school and she got a terrific degree. And then she got a wonderful job and she completely reinvented herself. And I found that so inspiring.
Yeah, I do too. I love it. I think this, it's really funny because I think the next question, it was percolating in the back of my head here. And you know, you and I only spoke for a minute or so. And I said to you, what I love most is discovering people on the show as opposed to sort of pre-planning a show and having some kind of canned question. A part of me was, again, I try and put myself in the situation of people listening. And I want to talk about those people that are listening that have managers or bosses or are in situations that they really don't like. And I would say, you know, when you look at the stats, about 74% of employed people actually dislike, or even, I don't like using the word hate, but I'm going to use it in this case.
That's right.
They hate their work. And yet they're terrified because of that. They're almost imprisoned by the paycheck. And it's not even like it's a great paycheck. But can you talk a little bit about this whole quitting thing? Can we talk a little bit more about that, that sometimes quitting can be the start of the greatest reinvention or the greatest bounce back of our lives, right?
Oh, yeah. So, well, there were a couple of stories that were going through my head when you were talking. One of them is, you know, when you are in a situation that you hate. And so I had a client come to me, and he had worked at a company for about, I think it was 7 years as a project manager, and he was very successful, but he was bored. You know, after 7 years doing the same job over and over and doing the same types of projects with the same budget and the same people, you know, anybody would get bored. And so he came to me saying, Sherry, I want to reinvent myself. You know, can you help me and help me figure out what I should be doing? And after talking to him and after a couple of sessions, he just simply wanted a chance to gain more credibility. He wanted a chance to gain more visibility with senior leaders. And so we put together kind of a sketched out kind of a game plan. And one thing that he did was he went and he volunteered for two super high visible projects that were going on within the company. I mean, really beefy, high visible projects. And I said, why don't you just go and volunteer and say, hey, I can give you 2 hours of my time each week. You know, is there something I can do? Well, on one of those, so he came back a session or two later. He said, okay, Sherry, I volunteered for two of them. It's like, okay, great. And then the next time he came back, what happened is on one of them, the project manager actually left and said to him, hey, I got to leave. Do you want to come back and do you want to drive this big, huge, beefy project? And the project scared him. I mean, it scared him to death, but he was so energized. He was so invigorated. He was firing on all cylinders. And since then, he's now had a couple of different promotions, and now he's got more advancement, and now he's actually mentoring people. So I'm a big believer on if you're unhappy in your job, that's okay. I think it's part of the natural ebb and flow. There are ways that you can try to work with your manager and try to gain some more visibility and credibility and get into a place that you feel is just more meaningful and purposeful and gives you joy. But I think you were asking me, David, about can I talk about how maybe you are, you know, the person who is really unhappy in their job and then they leave and go out on their own.
Well, that courage to, I mean, because if the stats are true, and again, I didn't write the stats, I just looked them up. But, you know, if over 70% of people are really unhappy in their work, and that unhappiness oozes back into their family, into the apathy, which sometimes consumes them. But this idea of having the courage sometime to reinvent yourself or bounce back, not because somebody else did it to you, but because you're willing to do it to yourself, you're willing to walk out.
Yeah. There was a great story. It was a gut-wrenching decision there was an Emmy-winning TV news producer. And he was a TV reporter out here in Phoenix, and he was very popular. He'd been at the NBC affiliate for, gosh, I think like 15 years. Everybody knew him. He was just awesome. And he got to a point where he really wanted to stretch and grow in his job, and he wanted some anchor responsibilities, you know, like to be anchor on the weekend, stuff like that. And so he just kept having heart-to-heart conversations with his manager, and his manager kept saying no, 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 no. And he got to a point where he thought about, gosh, look at what I'm giving up in my life. He was giving up freedom to go to his kids' baseball games. He was giving up Christmases and Thanksgiving, you know, to be a news reporter. And it just got to a point where he set the bar and he just thought, I am not going to do this. I'm not getting the benefit anymore. And the benefit that he wanted was anchor responsibilities. And so then he started thinking about, okay, I really can't get what I want in this organization with this manager. And so he started putting together a game plan of, if I left, what would I do? And so he went out and he started talking to people, and he found somebody who was also a really terrific news reporter. I remember him in Phoenix too. And he went off on his own, started his own company. And so Rich in the book talks about how he, you know, started meeting with other people, and he found this gentleman, and he became quite a fantastic mentor for him. So he helped bridge Rich getting out of the TV industry into his own. And right now, you know, Rich Dubeck is just phenomenal. He does media coaching, and he's just terrific. He's very successful. He's super happy. He has freedom that he wants. He's living the lifestyle he wants. He's getting the pay that he wants, and he's making all the decisions.
And I look at that moment, though, especially when he's in a career And having that courage, I think it comes out of courage, right?
Because it
it's so much of the unknown.
I
always say, you know, courage is the only, we can only experience courage in the face of fear.
Yes.
And the definition of the word fear is the anticipation of pain. And so much of why we don't do it, why we are unhappy, why we won't quit, why we don't ask for the things we want, why we don't, you know, I love this idea, set the bar. I love that idea. I love that term. I'm setting the bar. This is what I'm willing to do. And I always say there's a great saying I love, which is, you know, I teach people how to treat me. And employees do the same thing, right? Yeah. So but this question of courage and the anticipation of pain means that most people won't do it because they're in their mind, they're making up a story of what's going to happen if they do this. And the story is pretty bleak in their head, right?
Wow, that's great. I love it. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They've got to, you know, they all talk about the fear of how they approached the fear, how they got through the fear, what it was that was really stopping them. You know, nobody likes change. Nobody likes change. I mean, we'd all rather be comfortable and stay where we are. Change is uncomfortable. So they all talk about how they had fear of change, fear of failure. You know, what if I leave this and I go somewhere and I'm worse? You know, that's really their biggest fear. And so it was very interesting as I was researching and interviewing these people and listening to their stories. It was very interesting. Everybody approached fear a little bit differently. And I think the key was they each had to figure out what their own motivation was. And the motivation is different for everybody. And I think that that's why so many people stay stuck in their career, David, is because they go ask a bunch of people, they go talk to a bunch of people, you know, how did you make that change? Why did you make that change? How can I make that change? And at the end of a month, 2 months, whatever, they have 14 people giving them 14 different pieces of advice. They still stay stuck. And the answer is they have to figure it out for themselves. There's something motivating you. You have to figure out. First of all, there's something motivating you to stay in the position where you are. You have to figure out what that is. Maybe it is a paycheck. Maybe it's that, you know, you're allowed to work 4 hours a day. You know, whatever it is, it's okay. But that's your motivation for staying. And then figure out, what's your motivation for leaving? What is it that you really want? Oh, you want certain pay and you want to be able to only work 4 hours a day. Okay. Well, you know what? You probably can get that. You probably can get that. Go out there and try and find it.
This is so true. I mean, I was actually making notes while you're speaking because I love it so much. This motivation for leaving and motivation for staying.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And the truth is, once we know clearly what we want, I did a show. Recently where I talk about, you know, a sort of everything we want, it's already there. We just have to be really clear about it. It doesn't matter what it is. I mean, and this whole idea of reinvention and creating exactly the life we want. I mean, for most of us hearing it for the first time, it's kind of like that just doesn't sound right because my whole life I've been sort of like following this path. You know, I mean, in my generation, and Sherry, you look so much younger than me, so I'm not going to put you in the same generation as me. But we were told, go out, find a job, work hard, you know, keep your nose to the grindstone. And a lot of people in my generation, that was the education process. Just don't question the man, right? But the truth is what you're seeing, and you've seen it and you've studied this, is that when we get clear on what we want, we can actually create everything we want once we're clear on it and once we have the courage to step into it, right?
That's right. That's right. I give a couple of different exercises when I'm coaching clients. I give a couple of different exercises on how to gain that vision. Because a lot of people get stuck. You know, they don't have a vision for themselves. They don't really know what their life's purpose is. They don't know what they're supposed to be doing in their career. And that's fine. A lot of people get stuck there. And so there are exercises that you can do to really think about what is it that you want. And then when you think about, okay, this is what I want, then actually just, you know, breaking it down. I think it was Jack Canfield who was talking about, you know, you got to be so specific on your goals. You know, if you want a goal, you were talking about how to live an extraordinary life. And he was saying, a lot of people say, you know, they want a beach by the, or a house by the ocean. And he says, you know, which ocean and how big is the house? 4,000 square feet, 3,000, 5,000, be very, very specific. So yes, exactly what you're saying. I think that when you really get focused, really get clear, really get specific on what kind of work you want to be doing and the type of people you want to be working for, I think the universe has a way of giving you those opportunities or allowing you to go seek them out the way that, Rich seeked out his mentor in TV to help him make that change.
Mm. You have, by the way, I'm enjoying this so much. I feel I can't believe that we're sort of coming down to the end of the show soon, and I feel like we've just started talking.
I feel the same way.
But, you know, so yeah, that was Jack, you know, and Jack talked also about those hardships, you know, and what he had to endure and, you know, being in a situation of doing things he didn't like. And so he's reinvent. I mean, him and I are very, very close friends and we're business partners now, right, in the resort. And, you know, this whole idea of reinvention, I see that with successful people over and over and over again, that Jack is constantly in a state of reinvention. He's constantly bouncing back and taking what he's learned into the next stage. Do you see that with successful people as well?
I do. I think the difference between successful people and non-successful people is that successful people have bumps in the road. We all do. Everybody has tornadoes that they go through, but it's the successful people who actually pick themselves back up and they go look for their next mountain that they want to conquer and they just go on. They're very resilient. They're bouncy. People who get...
They're tiggers. Oh, the
They're
wonderful
tiggers.
Thing about Tigger is I'm the only one. Bouncy, bouncy, bouncy.
That's right. And the successful people, you know, they've hit the same roadblocks. They've hit the same challenges. You know, as I started talking to people and researching for the book, I really learned that. It's like, wow. And it was validating writing the book because I realized, okay, so it's not just me. It really does happen to everybody. And so it's the successful people that really learn how to rebound much, much faster. And they don't take it personally. It's more like, okay, you don't want me? Okay, that's fine. Bless you. You know, that's I respect that. I'm just going to move over here now. I'm going to do this other thing for these other people.
There's no dwelling on that.
Yes.
I mean, it's really funny. When you look at two quotes, one by Confucius, I think he was the one that said, choose a job you love and you'll never have to work a day in your life. When I think of that quote, though, the word choose, of course, is what you've been talking about and is what's so important in your book. It's this idea of choice. And then Thomas Edison, he's the one that said, opportunity is missed by most people because it's dressed in overalls and looks like work. those of us that are constantly reinventing, we get busy. And you talked about that with the success of this lady, you know, where she went out there and she made it happen. You know, and a lot of us don't because it looks like, oh, that's a lot of work to reinvent, a lot of work to sort of create the life of my dreams. But the truth is there is work involved, right?
There is work involved. I think the biggest mistake that I made in my career, was leaving my career in the hands of someone else.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Like a manager or a company and thinking that my manager has my back. My manager knows I'm loyal and I'm dedicated. I'm all about results. And then one day I was working at a Fortune 100 company and, I lost my job and I'd been there for 2 years and it wasn't anything I had done. I'd been very successful in my year-end performance. I had a great relationship with my manager. I had a great relationship with her manager. It was simply a matter that the senior leaders decided that they needed to have a certain headcount in the organization and they took the org chart and they put a big red X through my job role. And so I was stunned. I was angry. I was mad. I was like, how can you, it was mind-boggling to me that you can do every single thing your manager asks you to do and you can do it well, you can get great results and you can do it with a great attitude and you could still lose your job. And I realized in that moment that my whole life, I'd been very reactive. You know, at the TV station, I did whatever they told me to do. At the advertising agency, I did whatever they told me to do. At the accounting firm, I did whatever they told me to do. And the truth is that in that moment, and that was 12 years ago, I didn't have a great paycheck. I wasn't happy with my job title. I wasn't happy in my career. And I realized that being reactive just wasn't working for me. I needed to figure out a way to be proactive. So my journey really has been in the last 12 years was figuring out ways how to be proactive. Mm. You know, and the end of that story is that It was a really great company. They didn't just flat out lay you off and give you 2 weeks severance. They actually gave you a period of 8 weeks to look for a job within the company. And so I did find another job, and I found a job pretty quickly. But I'm still there today. I've actually worked at that Fortune 100 company for 13 years now. So what I'm doing in my career is I love working in that company. I work with brilliant, scary, smart people that I learn from, and it's energizing and it's fun and it's great. And I've started, you know, my own kind of thing on the side where I write and I speak and I coach clients on the side.
I love that. And by the way, the show kind of, we've hit that magic number of minutes that we're on the show, but I want to talk to you for a couple of minutes more here. This idea then that on the side, you fulfill your passion and you love the environment you work in, that is such a permission giver to everyone out there right now who's in a situation, first of all, to reinvent themselves, maybe within the job, within the company they're in. And the second is on the side, we have the grace and the possibility to do anything we want. You know, and you're going to New York soon to get your award for your wonderful book, The Bounce Back. Let's talk about one last thing before I ask you my final question. You know the question I'm going to ask you, but
I do know the question.
One last thing, only because you listen to the show. I never tell anyone that ahead of time. I like to see what comes out of their head right off the bat, right? But let's talk to a manager and the people who are in the situation of having that power over people. Any tips for them listening? If someone listening right now who does manage or run a company, what could they do to help people really flourish within their groups?
Oh, yeah. I think the number one thing is really asking their direct reports, asking them, why do you want to work here? What is it that inspires you? What do you enjoy doing the most? And figuring out, you know, helping them figure out what their strengths are. I love Marcus Buckingham. He's such a revolutionist with the strengths. And when you really help people understand what their strengths are and what gives them energy, then you can kind of shift those types of projects or those types of work or those types of teams in their direction. And when people are in their strength zone, they're so much more charged. They're going to be so much more productive. They're going to be, help the company be so much more successful. So I think it's really a manager's role is to help an employee figure out what their strengths are, what's fun at work, what do they lose all sense of time when they're doing something, what is it, and helping them tap into that and then shift them towards projects like that. I think you're going to have more success for them, and I think you're going to have more success for you as a manager.
You know, Lee Iacocca, he said, management is nothing more than motivating other people. You know,
oh.
I think that's such a wonderful way. Right?
Wow.
Your final question. This is called the Kick-Ass Life Show. So, Sherry, this has been absolutely lovely. I'm going to be training down in Phoenix in a week and a half. So we're going to hook up. I'm going to make sure we
awesome.
Do that.
Awesome.
But
yes.
So what does a kick-ass life mean to you, young Sherry?
You know, I think it's really figuring out what it is that gives you joy and then making time in your calendar and making space in your mind to do those things. A lot of times, you know, I've thought in my life, you know, I want to do this. I want to be one of the few women disc jockeys in the country. And I did it. And it didn't give me any joy. It really didn't. And there are reasons for that. So I think it's really understanding what it is that gives you joy. And then when I say, you know, creating time in your calendar, it's making it a priority. And then and when I say creating space in your mind, for me, it was interesting. A few years ago, I realized that I'm a big tennis player. I played in college and I taught tennis. And I realized that whenever I was out on the tennis court, I was almost feeling guilty, thinking, I should be back at the office. I should be working on this proposal. I should be researching this project. I should be doing this. And when I was at work, I would think, oh, man, I wish I was out on the tennis court. I really need to practice for that tournament that's coming up. And I realized that I had this kind of angst going on inside of me all the time. And so I had to really give myself permission to, no, I'm out on the tennis court. I want to enjoy the moment. I want to park all of the anxiety, what I should be doing, could be doing, all of that. I'm going to park it for the next 2 hours and enjoy this. So that's what I mean by creating the mind space. And so I love to create the mind space and time on my calendar to learn new things. I'm always asking myself, what's the next thing I want to learn? What's the next thing I want to learn, and making time for that. So for me, you know, to get a little specific here, the extraordinary life is for me, it's keeping in balance and nurturing my spiritual side, my physical side, and my mind. My mind, my body, and my spirit. And
awesome. Well, you know, Jackson Brown says, when you find a job you love, you'll add 5 days to every week. So,
I love that.
Sherry, you've been lovely. I can't wait to have you back.
It's been a pleasure.
And thank you for being a loyal listener. That really gives me a lot of warm fuzzies.
Oh, I love it. I always learn something from your podcast. They're wonderful.
All right. I'll see you on the other side.
Okay. Sounds great.
See what I tell you? She is lovely. Isn't she lovely? Don't you want to adopt her? I do. Hey, listen, she didn't tell you about her free gift. She's offering you a free gift. 3 chapters of her book, The Bounce Back. The personal stories of bouncing back higher and faster after a layoff, a reorg, or a career setback. But I think it's beyond that. I think everyone should read it as preparation, whether you're in the middle of it right now, but just the philosophy of bouncing back, knowing that whatever happens in your life, you have the courage, you have the tenacity, you have the point of focus to bounce back, to focus on the right things, not the crappy things. You know, remember that saying, what I focus on expands, all right? And you go to www.mybounceback.com, www.mybounceback.com to get 3 free chapters of Sherry's book. Anyway, so, you know, I think that, you know, the lessons are there. I do think we should have one more song by this wonderful band. And this is, again, this is her, Swedish House Mafia, which is her choice. What a great choice. I'm so glad, because I wouldn't have played this. So here we go. There's another song for her.
Bring it back to life. We're gonna make it, you.
Yep, you're going to make it, whatever happens. And sometimes the bigger the happening, I'm telling you, it's all good stuff. I wouldn't go back and change one thing. Not one thing about anything that's happened in my life. The crappy, the bad, the worse than crappy and bad. It's all maybe who I am. I so embrace it. So if you're in the middle of shit right now, guess what? Don't worry about it. All right, start focusing on what you want. Know what's going on. It's never the circumstances. It's a story. We wrap around it. All right. So change the story, change the focus, take a step, take the experience, utilize it, put a freaking smile on your face, and be grateful where we started. I'll see you on the other side.
Turn the crowd up now, we'll never back down, we shoot down a skyline, watch it on prime time, turn up the love now, listen up now, turn up.
Thanks for listening to The Kick-Ass Life with David Wood. Stay connected on Facebook / The Kick-Ass Life, on Twitter at The Kick-Ass Life, and of course at thekickasslife.com.
That was kick-ass.